I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
Breaking his silence and sharing his pain. Allegations of abuse in the NHL. The player who says the league let him down. And the calls for swift action to change the culture around the game. Good evening. Accusations of sexual assault and mishandling by the Chicago Blackhawks are sending shockwaves through the sports world.
A former first-round draft pick coming forward as the player behind a lawsuit against the team. And tonight, support's being shown on and off the ice. CTV's Janvier Beauchemin reports.
I was fearful. I had had my career threatened.
Player Kyle Beach came forward, put a face on allegations of sexual assault by an assistant coach, Brad Aldrich, and highlighted the Blackhawks' mishandling of his complaint. And the hockey world is now saluting his colossal courage. You have and will change hockey culture forever, tweeted hockey great Haley Wickenhauser.
When you hear stories like this, it just like someone punches you in the gut. And no player should ever have to go through that.
But this comes after more than a decade when Beach felt ignored, isolated. When an independent report by a law firm concluded the Blackhawks did nothing for 3 weeks during the team's Stanley Cup run.
I felt sick to my stomach. I reported this and I was made aware that it made it all the way up the chain of command. Nothing happened. It was like his life was the same as it was the day before. And then when they won, to see him paraded around, lifting the cup at the parade, at the team pictures, at the celebrations, it made me feel like nothing.
Beach says he believes everyone in the locker room knew, but Captain Jonathan Toews says he heard rumors only later, after the assistant coach Aldrich had left the team.
The truth is, a lot of us were focused on just playing hockey and doing what we're doing every single day. And, you know, I think the guys that were part of that group all wish they could have done something different.
There has been fallout. The Blackhawks have been fined $2 million. The general manager and the senior VP of hockey operations have left the team.
Many players say the culture of shame and cover-up has improved over the past decade, but that the NHL has to get it right now because all eyes are on the league. Geneviève Beauchemin, CTV News, Montreal.
B says for years he felt alone. This act of openness being felt by others.
And for loved ones of abuse victims, including family members of one Toronto man, this story hits close to home. CTV's Zoraida Allman is live with more. Zoraida.
Michelle and Nathan, Gary Cruz says watching Kyle Beach tell his story rocked him to his core, largely because of the similarities to his own brother Martin Cruz's story. More than 20 years separating the two, the pain and the trauma, no different.
For Gary Cruz and his wife, Teresa, hearing Kyle Beach's story was like reliving a family trauma, almost 24 years to the day of his brother's death.
I had tears in my eyes. I felt his pain. And I felt his pain was exactly like Martin's pain. I felt it. It was just so real. It rocked our bodies. And I went, you know what? This is bad.
In the late 1990s, Gary's brother, Martin Cruz, was one of the first to come forward with his story of sexual abuse at Maple Leaf Gardens by convicted pedophile Gordon Stuckless.
We really respect Kyle Beach's strength and his courage to come forward, because it's hard.
Stuckless pleaded guilty to 24 counts of sexual assault in 1997. He was sentenced to 2 years less a day. It wasn't long after that sentence was handed down that Martin Cruz died by suicide.
We need to change the laws. We cannot leave it up to the judges, individual judges, to make the decisions, because they don't have experience, most of them, for the most part.
Since Martin's death, his family has worked tirelessly to not only change the laws and lobby for tougher sentences, but also to support other victims of sexual assault.
The Stanley Cup was more important than a human life, and you know what? That has to stop.
They started AbuseHurts.ca, which has helped more than 250 survivors. The family now hoping to reach out to Kyle Beach and offer their support.
Kyle was finally ready to come forward with a story, and we commend him, but he's going to need a lot of support now. So it's up to us and his group, his family, to be there to support him, because the rough road is just going to start.
A rough road that this and many other families will continue to walk for the rest of their lives.
His legacy will last forever. We're very, very proud of him. It was the toughest thing for him to come out with his story, and we know he's made a lot of other lives more peaceful.
Gary Cruz says their work will continue to lobby the federal government to provide more support for sexual abuse victims and for the laws to change. In the meantime, the family does plan to reach out to Kyle Beach and offer their support. I'm Zoraida Allman. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Zoraida. And our coverage of this story continues online. Our team is tracking every development. And you can hear more from Kyle Beach at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Straight ahead, locking down long-term care. The plans to strengthen a sector hard hit by the pandemic. The key changes that could be on the way.
But first, to the special deliveries coming to all Ontario schools. Take-home testing kits available for everyone.
The goal, keeping classrooms open as normal. But not all parents are giving this a perfect grade. CTV's Sean Lethong is live with more. Sean.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, it's the rollout of a pilot project that began around the Toronto area, and the education minister says they are now being more vigilant.
A change in the province's approach to testing in schools.
In this expanded program, students will be able to pick up a PCR self-collection kit at school.
At Queen's Park today, Education Minister Stephen Lecce announcing that starting mid-November, all publicly funded schools will have access to take-home PCR tests, rapid antigen testing for unvaccinated children, and testing unvaccinated staff 3 times a week, up from the previous 2 times per week. Take-home PCR testing kits will be available to students who have symptoms and students who have been identified as a close contact of someone with a confirmed case.
The take-home approach will also provide convenience for parents and for families and help to potentially identify more cases to keep these schools open and safe.
Tests would then be dropped off at a predetermined location for processing. Currently, there are 503 schools in Ontario with confirmed cases of COVID-19, and 2 schools are closed. The use of rapid testing is part of a program aimed at keeping schools open that might have otherwise closed.
This is especially important for the approximately 1.1 million students in schools who are not yet eligible for a vaccine.
In schools where a COVID-19 case has been confirmed, rapid tests will be made available to students who are asymptomatic and those who haven't been exposed or are not a close contact.
So while the provincial government may be calling this an expansion of testing in schools, some parents who have been advocating for more testing say this doesn't go far enough.
What we were trying to do is prevent a child with COVID from going to school.
Kate Dupuy is a parent and part of a group who created their own rapid testing program until the government stepped in a month ago. She says that rapid tests are meant to be used proactively, not after cases have been found.
It's like saying to a child, go out and play, we'll give you an umbrella after you're already drenched.
Dupuy also says that PCR tests are good for students who have symptoms, but fails to screen asymptomatic cases.
When it concerns cases getting into schools, you saw that number of 503 schools with confirmed cases. That represents over 10% of all schools in Ontario. Reporting live, I'm Sean Lethong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. Next, to the loosening of limits at more places across Ontario, specifically the great outdoors.
Larger gatherings are allowed. So what does that mean as we approach a busy season for events? CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live in the Distillery District tonight with more. Scott.
Well, Michelle, Monday morning, a 50-foot Christmas tree will be delivered here. It will be installed just a few feet behind me. It is a sign that the holidays are fast approaching, but it's also a sign that things are gradually returning to normal.
The sights, sounds, and smells of the holiday season will return to the Distillery District next month with the new Distillery Winter Village.
It's different than the Toronto Christmas Market. We are removing a lot of the festival elements that were here in the past, like our stage, our Santa photo ops, and pieces like that. And we're catering to a more intimate experience where people can enjoy the magic of the holidays.
Today, the provincial government lifted capacity limits on outdoor activities, meaning the thousands of people who traditionally visit the Distillery District over the holidays can return, but organizers have been planning for a more manageable event with crowd limits and vaccine passports.
We know there have been really large crowds here, and being mindful of COVID-19 and what the last year has looked like, we really want to ensure we're creating a safe experience for our visitors.
From Remembrance Day ceremonies to ski hills, large-scale outdoor events and activities may resume in Ontario. Organized outdoor events will no longer have capacity limits so long as attendees wear masks when a physical distance of 2 meters can't be kept.
Merry Christmas!
But even with the changes to regulations, one of those large-scale outdoor events will remain virtual this year.
I mean, this decision was made several weeks ago, back into the early summer months, to accommodate the amount of time we need for permitting and for organizing volunteers and liaising with Toronto Police and traffic management, and all of those services takes weeks and weeks of planning.
Organizers with the Toronto Santa Claus Parade say even without capacity restrictions, there are a number of reasons why a traditional parade with spectators can't happen this year, including the mandate that vaccine passports must be used for events over 20,000 people.
We're a free public event that could have upwards of a million people on street. So obviously employing the now vaccine passport system isn't a possibility. A huge percentage of our audience are 11 and under who are still unvaccinated.
Organizers say they hope next year Santa and the crowds of parade goers will be able to return to the roads.
So just like last year, the Santa Claus Parade will be broadcast only. It will be shown right here on CTV December 4th at 7 o'clock. As for the Distillery Winter Village, that starts November 18th, runs until December 31st. Reporting live in the Distillery District, Scott Lightfoot. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Scott. Not a bad day. We had some clouds. Michelle Jobin's here with a look at the current conditions. Michelle.
Not a bad day at all, Nathan. We did, of course, stay a little bit on the cooler side, and that's because the sunshine just took a fair bit of time to show itself, a little bit more so in terms of sun downtown than we saw north of the city. But also the winds played a big factor in how things felt today. Gusting out of the east, they're a little bit out of the northwest, and quite breezy in Hamilton at 43 kilometers an hour sustained. Sustained winds at 17 kilometers an hour in the city of Toronto, gusting up to 31. So we're going to stay on the breezy side as we head through the overnight period. For the most part, we'll just see some cloud cover. There is a system off to the southwest that is going to be a weather maker for us as we get into tomorrow. We'll talk about that coming up around the region right now. It's 9 in Oshawa and in Brampton, 11 degrees in Delhi, and 10 in Welland. And if you're in the city of Toronto right now, we're sitting at 10 at the islands with a little more sun, 9 at the airport. Overnight tonight, holding at 10 and breezy. I'll tell you more about what you can expect coming up in your 7-day forecast. Back to you.
All right, thanks, Michelle. He was fully vaccinated against COVID-19, a great-grandfather who loved to play hockey.
But tonight, amid their grief, his family is wondering whether a virus outbreak within his men's league may have contributed to his death. CTV's Mike Walker reports.
Complete and utter shock.
The family of Gary Weston is struggling to comprehend how the Oromandante senior died from COVID-19. He was fully vaccinated, and his daughter believes the 75-year-old contracted the virus at a men's rec hockey league in Newmarket.
Everybody was fully vaccinated. It broke through everybody, my whole family, my dad, of course. The thing is, how could you be vaccinated and still get it?
Weston played at the national training rinks in Newmarket on September 30th. All league players were required to be fully vaccinated. Less than a week later, he tested positive for COVID-19 after feeling unwell. His family said he died on October 21st in hospital after suffering a severe stroke while fighting pneumonia caused by COVID-19.
The ICU doctor basically told us he wouldn't be able to go home, even if he did make it off of the ventilator. It was definitely per his pre-planned wishes. And so Thursday morning, my younger sister and his oldest granddaughter, they went together to be with him at the hospital, and we removed life support from him at that time.
York Public Health has declared an outbreak in the men's 3-on-3 league, confirming 15 cases linked to games on September 27th, 30th, and October 4th.
We're all hurting. His family, of course, is hurting. All his friends are as well.
Brian Dunn is a lifelong friend of Weston. He sat beside him in the dressing room and also tested positive for the virus.
How do we all get this transmitted to each other? We weren't in each other's dressing rooms. We were all double vaccinated. We went into the rink showing our proof of vaccination with our mask on.
Public Health says the arena was following all protocols. The arena's general manager wishes they had learned of the outbreak sooner.
Timing of everything was the confusing part for us, only because the timelines of when they got sick versus when we were notified were very, very spread apart. So it would have been a lot easier to maybe manage or control if we had known 10 days prior to when we actually found out. So,
as for Weston's family, they continue to advocate for vaccines.
There still are some people, for some reason, and nobody knows why at this point, that it will break through and take somebody. So that's why we're huge advocates still of the vaccine and of masking and washing your hands and not letting your guard down.
Now planning a memorial service for June. Mike Walker, CTV News.
Next, to a scene of violence and chaos in Scarborough. A vehicle into a house, the driver found with gunshot wounds.
And that man did not survive. Loved ones distraught over the sudden loss. CTV's John Musselman reports.
Police were called to the Scarborough townhouse complex around 3:45 a.m. When they arrived, they found a car that crashed into the front steps of a townhouse. The injured driver was rushed to hospital in life-threatening condition, but he did not survive. Investigators say the driver had been shot. Police have identified him as 27-year-old Jamal James of Toronto. This man says he's the victim's uncle. He spoke to CTV News at the scene.
I don't know why they shoot me. I mean, if you don't do nobody. If he was in a gang, I would sell all right, yes.
Steven says his nephew recently opened a tattoo business. The family is devastated and they can't understand why this happened. He says James didn't hang around with bad people.
He didn't deserve this. If he didn't in a gang and so they mix it with the wrong company, I'd understand. But if he makes it stupidness, he's gonna get paid. I'm gonna never didn't do that.
The homicide squad has taken over this investigation. Detectives say it's too early to determine the motive. Police won't say if this was a targeted shooting.
We're still investigating how many suspects were involved, if there was any vehicle that was involved as well. And when we have information we can provide, we'll obviously provide it to the media and hope that it provides assistance to anyone who may have seen anything.
I don't know if it's a gunshot, and then only to find out that this morning.
The scene is near Washburn Way and Tapscott Road. That's near Nielsen and Shepherd. The parking lot and the underground garage has been sealed off by police. It's not clear if the victim was fleeing the shooter when he lost control of the car or if he had been wounded and was unable to drive, and that's when the car hit the front of the townhouse. Anyone with information is asked to call Toronto Police or Crime Stoppers. John Musselman, CTV News.
A grim confirmation this evening from investigators as they search for answers in the disappearance of two Whitby women who were presumed dead. Human remains were located on Sunday evening in the city of Kawartha Lakes. Durham police have now identified one of the bodies as that of 58-year-old Ava Burton. She was listed as missing on October 14th, along with her mother, 85-year-old Tatilda Noble. The second body hasn't been identified. Police have arrested 30-year-old Joshua Burton, the son and grandson of the victims, is charged with two counts of second-degree murder.
In Vaughan, police have charged a driver after a collision in September that claimed the life of a 10-year-old child. On the morning of September 1st, emergency crews responded to a crash on Pleasant Ridge Avenue, north of Highway 7. They found a 10-year-old girl with life-threatening injuries. She later died in hospital. The driver, 33-year-old Tonalone Nguyen of Mississauga, now faces one charge of careless driving causing death. She will appear in court in February.
A disturbing story to tell you about in Bowmanville. Durham police have charged the operator of a support clinic for children with autism with assault. The alleged incidents took place at Think Tank Therapy in Bowmanville. Police say the owner and clinical director physically assaulted a non-verbal 8-year-old child on two separate occasions earlier this month. 29-year-old Michelle Gallagher of Clarington faces two assault charges. She was released with conditions.
More people are sharing their stories about condo rules they say are discriminatory.
It's after our story about a couple in Toronto asked to prove they were married or leave. CTV's John Woodward is live with more. John, we're now getting a sense of how widespread these rules are.
Michelle, we did some digging and kept finding different variations of this single family rule, apparently designed to keep the condo quiet, but now it's prompting a lot of noise.
Well, for me, it's personally very offensive.
That's how Paula Boutis reacted when she discovered her Roncesvalles condo had a rule about who could live there.
Units were only for private single families, and she says she was told she had to turn some rental applicants away.
I raised with the condo my concerns that the rule is discriminatory. And for example, what if two single moms came and said, we'd like to rent your place, and my place is big enough, three bedrooms, they each have a kid, they can't live there.
So Buddhist filed a human rights complaint, alleging the rule was morally offensive. A similar rule was what prompted the Century Plaza condominium on Wellesley Street to ask Michael Cohen and his boyfriend to prove they were married or get out. They aren't the only ones. A review of published condo rules show many more that use some variation of the single-family restriction. In question period, the opposition NDP asked why the province's condo watchdog, the Condo Appeal Tribunal, isn't able to take complaints about these rules.
Can you commit to expanding the jurisdiction of the tribunal so condo residents have the rights and the protections that they deserve?
The Condominium Act is undergoing great review right at this time.
Ontario's government is expanding the watchdog's jurisdiction to complaints about nuisance, but not discrimination. As for Ontario's Human Rights Tribunal,
there's a backlog, a significant backlog at the Human Rights Tribunal. So what used to be a year, year and a half is now 2 to 3 years.
Buddhist filed her human rights complaint a year ago. She doesn't even know yet whether the tribunal will accept it. Her condo board didn't return calls.
Why are we doing that? It is already such an expensive city to live in. There's just no good reason.
She wants the government of Ontario to set province-wide standards so no one is excluded from living in a condo because of who their family is.
A possible way forward was actually discussed in a 2015 court case where a condo expanded the definition of family to include childless couples, siblings living together, even two people living together, pooling resources, just as long as it was long-term. Expanding those definitions could actually find ways to include otherwise excluded people. Reporting live from Roncesvalles, I'm John Woodward. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, John. A move to increase accountability. That's how the province is pitching its plan for long-term care.
Advocates watching closely, calling this a moment to improve conditions after so many examples of shortcomings in the pandemic. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Nathan, the government says the aim here is to make sure what happened during the pandemic in long-term care never happens again. The province will be giving itself the power to take over a long-term care home that's not acting in the best interest of seniors.
COVID-19 has taken the lives of more than 4,000 seniors in long-term care and exposed the awful conditions elderly residents faced on a daily basis. Today, the Minister of Long-Term Care is promising that is going to change.
Our plan will make sure that there is accountability, that there is enforcement, and that there is transparency.
Under new legislation tabled today, anyone convicted under the Long-Term Care Act could face increased penalties for non-compliance, between $200,000 to $400,000 for individuals, and between $500,000 to $1 million for corporations, as well as a ban on working or overseeing a long-term care home in the future.
It could also involve a year in jail. Right, so there is significant implications.
But how often would that actually happen? The minister acknowledges it has been rare.
You know, there have been penalties under the Provincial Offences Act now for quite some time under the Long-Term Care Act. But there's only been one charge brought in the last 10 years, and that one charge failed.
The key, the minister says, is stronger enforcement. The ministry has beefed up the number of inspectors, and the government is promising one proactive inspection per long-term care home every single year. That's where the province has faced criticism before. The government dialed back the number of resident quality inspections being conducted in homes. There were 27 RQI inspections conducted in 2019, down from 300 the year before.
It was a big mistake. You know, the government cut inspections.
While the legislation looks to overhaul long-term care, what it does not do is address the past 18 months. Members of the opposition say the law should be retroactive, leading to charges for the worst actors during the pandemic.
Are you going to be making this legislation retroactive so that those who were the bad actors, as the premier calls them, will be punished?
No, there are rules currently in place to deal with that. But this legislation and our plan is really to move forward.
Moving forward, critics say the model of long-term care needs to be changed, eliminating profits from the sector.
We have an opportunity with many of these beds coming up and homes coming up for renewal of their licenses to transition them from that system into the not-for-profit sector.
The minister says that would mean having to pay out billions of dollars to private corporations to buy out the long-term care homes.
From a moral standpoint, do you feel like there should be anyone making profits off the backs of seniors?
We are concerned in making sure that quality of care and quality of life are the focus. And regardless of the structure of the organization doing it, they can deliver that. And we have hundreds of examples of that around the province.
So more enforcement in the future, but little justice for those who lost so much.
And when it comes to care, the gold standard in Ontario is 4 hours of care per resident per day. This law will now make it so that the Minister of Long-Term Care has to report publicly their progress to achieving that standard. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
Thank you, Colin. When it comes to COVID-19 in Ontario, the province is reporting 409 new cases in its most recent update. 265 of those cases are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 31,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is sitting at 1.3%.
366 more cases are now considered resolved, raising that total to nearly 586,000 over the course of the pandemic. Three more deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,865 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
And here's tonight's regional breakdown with 54 new cases in the city of Toronto, 45 in Peel Region, 25 new cases in York Region with 17 in Hamilton and 13 in Niagara. Durham Region has 7 new cases with 5 in Halton.
The TTC is bracing for staff shortages amid a mandate that all its workers be vaccinated against COVID-19.
And if you rely on public transit, that could impact your ability to catch a bus. Service reductions are coming. CTV's Janice Golding reports.
Despite its mandatory policy, the TTC says about 12% of its workforce is still unvaccinated, which means come November 21st, riders will be seeing some staffing and service reductions.
That would suck.
Yeah. A little annoyed.
It would make me feel angry since every single day I take the bus and the subway.
That's not good when you go to work.
The TTC says the staffing shortages will translate into about a 10% service reduction, primarily on its least busy bus routes at the slowest times of day.
And by that I mean that routes like a Shepherd or a Finch or Markham Road, Jane, Keele, Dufferin, those routes will be protected. There will be no changes on those routes from today at the busiest times because those, of course, are moving the most people.
The TTC says streetcar and subway lines shouldn't be affected, but routes like the Yonge 97, for example, will see fewer buses given there is parallel subway service. The TTC Workers Union, however, says there's no need for any service cuts at all. Quote, instead of cutting service, the TTC should look at sensible alternatives that help protect workers and riders, such as regular testing for the small number of members who wish not to receive the vaccine. The Transit Commission, however, says it stands by its vaccination policy, calling it the right thing to do for its employees, their families, and the community at large.
If you're going to cut off services because people aren't getting vaccinated, it's for the safety of people in Toronto.
People have to have the vaccination because it's very important.
We all have to deal with it somehow, but I don't think that's a good way of dealing with it.
In the meantime, the TTC says it will do what it can to shore up operation staffing.
We're bringing back some retirees who have offered to come back. We're reassigning shuttle operators from weekend closures, so there'll be no more weekend or evening closures on the subway line. So that gets us a couple hundred operators back into the system as well.
Earlier this month, the TTC announced that employees who aren't fully vaccinated or who would not disclose their vaccination status would be placed on unpaid leave come November 21st, and they could face termination if they aren't fully vaccinated by year's end. Janice Golding, CTV News.
Across the province, more than 88% of eligible people have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And 84.2% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents nearly 11 million people in Ontario.
Ontario hospitals are receiving more COVID-19 patients from Saskatchewan. Four of the ICU patients were scheduled to arrive today, followed by three others tomorrow and one on both Saturday and Sunday. But the Saskatchewan government says out-of-province transfers are expected to slow down. That's because intensive care admissions and case numbers continue to level off. Meanwhile, the armed forces is sending 15 more medical staff to help at the Regina General Hospital. They'll also assist in the transfer of patients to other provinces.
New York's disgraced former governor is now being accused of forcible touching. A criminal complaint has been filed in the state capital of Albany, accusing Andrew Cuomo of a misdemeanor sex crime. He allegedly put his hand under a woman's shirt last December. The woman has not been named. There are reports the complaint was filed prematurely, and a final decision about charging Cuomo has not been made. The third-term governor resigned following the release of an attorney general's report that concluded he sexually harassed 11 women.
A former Canadian military reservist has been sentenced to 9 years behind bars in the United States. Patrick Matthews was accused of plotting to trigger a race war in the U.S. by exploiting political and social tensions. There were discussions about killing federal officials, derailing trains, and poisoning water supplies. The 28-year-old Manitoba man will be on 3 years of supervised release when his time in prison ends.
Justin Trudeau is in the Netherlands tonight, kicking off a six-day trip to Europe. The Prime Minister arrived in Amsterdam, around 3 o'clock this afternoon, our time. He'll address the Dutch Parliament tomorrow before meeting with Prime Minister Mark Rutte. Trudeau will then head to Rome for the first in-person gathering of G20 leaders since 2019. Next Monday and Tuesday, he'll attend the UN Climate Conference in Glasgow, Scotland. In the UK, the Queen held a virtual audience today, 48 hours after cancelling a scheduled appearance next week. She was in good spirits while presenting David Constantine with a gold medal for poetry.
I'm very glad to have the chance to see you, if only mechanically, this morning.
Very well done. Yeah, congratulations.
I don't know what you do with it. You put it in a cupboard.
Somewhere safe.
The monarch was due to attend a reception Monday at the COP26 climate summit, but she withdrew on advice of doctors who want her to rest.
Meanwhile, the Queen's representative in Ontario was presented with the province's first poppy today. Lieutenant Governor Elizabeth Dowswell put on the iconic red flower during a ceremony in front of the Veterans Memorial Wall at Queen's Park. Tomorrow marks the official start of the Royal Canadian Legion's poppy campaign. The province is also introducing legislation that would ensure workers can wear a poppy during the week of Remembrance Day.
Still ahead, it'll give new meaning to the term office space. Plans for a mixed-use business park high above Earth.
I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, are you planning to buy a used vehicle anytime soon? If you are, watch out for curbsiders. A Whitby man who bought a pickup truck just found out the odometer was rolled back more than 100,000 kilometers. How can you protect yourself? I'll have my report just ahead.
We reached a high of 10 degrees in the city of Toronto today, and that's really where we're going to stay as we head through the overnight. So trending on the warmer side, normally around 4 this time of the year, which was last night's overnight low, by the way. So in the GTA and around the Golden Horseshoe, a little bit on the warmer side, also in southwestern Ontario, partly cloudy through the overnight period, still breezy. Cooler off to the north and east, where temperatures getting closer to the zero mark. Now tomorrow, not too much warmer, 12 degrees, cloudy to start, breezy, showers working their way in. And if you are further to the southwest or on the shores of Lake Erie, this is going to be quite a lot of rain for you, 25 to 45 millimeters. So we'll talk more about that coming up, and I'll have your 7-day forecast and a look ahead to Halloween. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Stay with us.
If you're looking to buy a used car, you can sometimes save money buying one through a private seller.
But if you have a problem after the sale, you don't have the same protections as if you bought from a registered car dealer. Pat Foran has the story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Thanks, Michelle and Nathan. A Whitby man needed a truck for his job and found one for sale online. It seemed like a good price, so he bought it. But when his mechanic checked the truck, he found the odometer had been rolled back more than 100,000 kilometers.
This one came about, and the miles seemed okay.
Dennis Estevez of Whitby is starting a construction business and needed a pickup truck. He was searching on Facebook Marketplace and saw an ad for a 2010 Ford F-150. The listing said the truck had 184,000 kilometers.
Estevez went to see it, felt it was in good shape for the price, and bought it uncertified. But when he took the truck to his mechanic, he was told the truck didn't have 184,000 kilometers. It actually had 320,000.
Clearly it was rolled back, and it needed a lot of work.
Estevez then found out the seller was not the registered owner of the truck and had used a false name. The truck needed $5,000 worth of repairs.
I immediately reached out to the seller and he's like, well, too bad, so sad, you bought it as is.
If Estevez purchased the truck from a registered car dealer, he would be eligible to receive money from OMVIC's compensation fund. Investigators say curbsiders who act as illegal dealers can use tools to change odometer readings.
There's technology today that really allows somebody who wants to be nefarious in their activities to spin an odometer back.
To avoid curbsiders, watch out for a seller who has multiple vehicles for sale, a vehicle not registered in the seller's name, someone who doesn't provide the used vehicle information package, which contains odometer readings, and refuses an inspection by the purchaser's mechanic. Estevez could try to take the seller to small claims court. OMVIC has agreed to investigate his case.
It's criminal. We have investigators who will support this and go after this guy.
Estevez says it was a tough lesson to learn.
When you buy a vehicle from a dealer, you do pay more, but having that peace of mind that you know if something is wrong, you can go back and you have recourses. If you're buying it privately, you really don't.
And vehicles sold by curbsiders are sometimes rebuilt wrecks that have been written off by insurance companies. It's not to say you should never buy privately, but if you do, you have to be careful and know exactly who you're dealing with. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Hey, Friday's just about here already. It's tomorrow, and it's a crucial time for the kids, Sunday as well, because you know they're going to be dressing up tomorrow, and you always hope the weather cooperates.
Yeah, that is part of the fun, a lot of kids wearing their costumes to school.
That's right. And my son will certainly be doing that tomorrow. And I know, Michelle, your kids will be doing that. And, you know, a lot hanging on the forecast in the next few days. It's working out favorably so far for the earlier half of tomorrow and also for Halloween. So we'll talk about that coming up. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a Terrain. So temperature-wise, we're going to stay, as I mentioned, sort of right where we are or close to it as we head through the overnight period. We're at 9 degrees at Pearson Airport, 10 downtown. We're looking at being around 10 degrees through the overnight. So holding a little bit steady, 13 in Windsor right now, a little cooler off to the east in Trenton at 8. So overnight tonight, 10 degrees, breezy winds out of the east, 30 to 40 kilometers an hour. And this is where we'll be tomorrow. Notice the rainfall that we have here. This is moving in earlier in the day. I'll show you that in a minute for southwestern Ontario and the Niagara region. So 15 in Welland tomorrow, 14 if you're in St. Thomas, 11 in Collingwood, 12 in Burlington, 11 in Aurora, and over to the east, 11 in Uxbridge, 13 in Huntsville, a little more sunshine for you later in the day, and also Trenton at 12 degrees. So satellite and radar imagery just sort of showing the leading edge of this system peeking through, and I'll show you it. It's a big one. It is a bit of a complex system of lows that's been affecting parts of the U.S., Midwest, all the way up into Manitoba in the last little while. And it's this big series of areas of low pressure that's going to work its way in with its associated fronts. And as it does, it will bring rainfall, heavier rainfall for those of us along the shores of Lake Erie into the Niagara region. And that's something to keep in mind because it could be a soggy one tomorrow. So overnight tonight, we have cloud cover in the GTA, just partly cloudy at times, but by the time we get to the morning, this is already affecting Windsor, Sarnia, up through London, Port Stanley, getting closer to the Brantford area. And then by the time we get into around 3 in the afternoon, we start to see the leading edge of it in the GTA. Notice heavier rainfall, 25 to 45 millimeters for those of us in and around Lake Erie, over towards Hamilton, Niagara Falls, less so for the GTA, but it's going to stay with us overnight in through the night into Saturday, and we're going to have several rounds of showers and be a little bit on the breezy side for Saturday. 12 tomorrow, 9 overnight, 9 degrees for Saturday with rain. Slight chance of showers Sunday morning, then 14 degrees, mostly cloudy. Slightest risk of seeing the afternoon showers, but I think that'll stay north and east of the GTA for Halloween, so that's good news. And then we go down to 10 on Monday. Stay with us. We have lots more to talk about coming up after the break.
Raptors vice chairman and president Masai Ujiri has said he's staying in Toronto for years to come.
And now Ujiri is taking on a new role as he doubles down on his support of basketball in Africa. Ujiri's been named an executive producer on a new documentary series. The project will focus on the first season of the newly established Basketball Africa League. It got underway during the pandemic in Rwanda. Ujiri, who grew up in Nigeria, has played a major role in supporting competitive basketball across the continent. He's also the president of Giants of Africa, which uses basketball as a tool to educate and enrich the lives of African youth. Ujiri said he's excited about the new documentary.
He said in a statement, "The very first time I was introduced to this project, I knew that I had to be a part of it." Ujiri added the inaugural season of the Basketball Africa League marked a special event in the history of sports in Africa, and I'm honored to help showcase the unique journey that has brought us to this moment in time.
Toy Story fans know Buzz Lightyear's name from the animated movie franchise, and now they're set to learn more about the astronaut. Pixar's released the first trailer for Lightyear, telling the origin story of the fictional astronaut who inspired the toy in Toy Story. Buzz Lightyear is voiced by Captain America actor Chris Evans, who is only heard briefly in the trailer. Lightyear hits theaters in June.
The nominations are now out for this year's American Music Awards. You've been Olivia Rodrigo leads the pack with 7 nominations, including New Artist of the Year and Favorite Music Video. She's tailed closely by Toronto's own The Weeknd, who received nods in 6 categories. He'll face off against Drake and Rodrigo for Artist of the Year. Taylor Swift is up for that award for a record 8th time. The AMAs are handed out in November.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
I felt sick to my stomach. I reported this, and I was made aware that it made it all the way up the chain of command. Nothing happened.
Updating our top stories, the hockey world is expressing support for Kyle Beach. The former Chicago Blackhawk draft pick is speaking out about allegations he was sexually assaulted by the team's former video coach in 2010.
The take-home approach will also provide convenience for parents and for families and help to potentially identify more cases to keep these schools open and safe.
Starting mid-November, all publicly funded schools in Ontario will have access to take-home PCR testing kits. There will also be rapid antigen testing for unvaccinated children.
We know there have been really large crowds here, and being mindful of COVID-19 and what the last year has looked like, we really want to ensure we're creating a safe experience for our visitors.
Ontario is lifting capacity limits on many outdoor events. They include Remembrance Day ceremonies, fairs, ski hills, and other recreational activities. Limits remain for outdoor social gatherings and nightclubs.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was up 15 basis points to 81.04 U.S. American benchmark oil was up 15 cents a barrel to close at 82.81. And the TSX Composite Index gained 242 points to close at 21,197.
A new report says more Canadians are having to use food banks.
Because of a lot of the pandemic-related unemployment, they're seeing many urban food banks, larger urban food banks are seeing usage double over the past 2 years. And considering that many of them were seeing thousands of clients, if not more, in a given month before the pandemic, this doubling is quite substantial.
Food Banks Canada says there were more than 1.3 million visits in March of this year alone. The organization is calling for a national rent support program to help people struggling to pay rent and put food on the table.
Facebook isn't going anywhere, but the tech giant is rebranding itself as Meta. Founder Mark Zuckerberg says the company is changing its name as it bets big on its virtual reality technology.
So let's start by exploring what different kinds of metaverse experiences could feel like, starting with the most important experience of all, connecting with people.
Zuckerberg showed off his own avatar and actions it could take in the so-called metaverse, like meeting virtually with others in 3D. Meta, as it's now known, is still the parent company of Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and virtual reality company Oculus. Critics say the rebranding appears like an attempt to distract from recent negative stories about Facebook. Kyle Beach's story is making headlines around the world.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Jackie Crandles and Christina Tenaglia. Christina, you'll be speaking with organizations that support survivors of sexual violence.
Yeah, and sexual violence in sport. This is not a new phenomenon, but we have seen, thanks to the bravery and courage of survivors, of athletes, more voices coming forward in recent years. Kyle Beach was failed by the NHL, and he continues to be failed by this organization, considering it was just today that Florida Panthers coach, who was formerly involved with the Blackhawks, Joel Quenneville, just met with the NHL, and it's even not clear if he's going to be terminated or not.
All right, and Jackie, you'll also be hearing from parents about the take-home testing kits for COVID-19.
Yeah, more testing options for staff and students at public schools right across this province. We're going to take a closer look at these take-home PCR tests, find out how effective they are in reducing transmission in schools. Also, more of these rapid tests available. We've been speaking with parents the last couple of months who've been advocating for rapid tests in schools. We'll check back in with them to get reaction to the news today.
All right, thank you, Jackie and Christina. CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9. Blue Origin is reaching for the stars with another milestone in commercial space travel.
The company that took Captain Kirk into orbit expects to have its own space station operating by the end of the decade.
Think of it as a village. Think of it as many different organizations and people in their own parts of Orbital Reef, doing their own activities.
The orbiting outpost will be developed with Boeing and built in partnership with Sierra Space. Blue Origin says the station will be operated as a mixed-use business space, a place for researchers, manufacturers, and visitors.
All right, so what's the weather here on Earth?
And overnight tonight, we're staying a little bit on the warmer side, Nathan. We are going to be 10 degrees, then 12 tomorrow. Showers pushing in from southwest to northeast tomorrow. And they'll stay with us overnight. Heavier rain Friday into Saturday, a high of just 9 degrees. And, of course, Sunday, everybody wants to know about the Halloween forecast. 14 degrees, slight risk of some showers, but for the most part, it's going to be mostly cloudy and a good night for trick-or-treating. Back to you.
All right, thanks, Michelle. Be sure to join Zoraida Altman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.
Good night.